At the NEFB Washington Watch, I'm visiting with Richard Wilkins, American Soybean Association. First of all, Richard, tell me where you're from, what you do.
I'm a farmer from Greenwood, Delaware.
All right. Well, thanks for being here with us today. We're having this meeting by chance during an interesting farm bill discussion, as we have two versions, House and Senate, going through markups here over the next couple days. What do you see in these farm bill versions as it relates to soybean growers and the things that are really important to you all?
We're pleased that both the House version of the bill and the Senate version of the bill, as it relates to Title I, they both contain provisions that allow the soybean grower to choose which type of commodity protection program, safety net, they feel would work best for them and their farming operation and their region of the country.
How about when you speak of safety net, how about something like where we're at on crop insurance, for example? I think that's some interesting things have been going on as it relates to that.
Certainly. I believe that the majority of farmers in the United States today consider crop insurance to be their primary safety net. On my own farming operation, I've carried crop insurance since 1983. It's allowed me to weather through many catastrophic weather events. It really created a much greater safety net when they started providing policies with revenue protection. And that's just phenomenal, because as farmers know, we have more to more risks than just weather risks. We have things that happen beyond our control that can affect what prices we receive for our commodities. And so the combination of quantity and price together is what we need a safety net for.
Well, let's turn to another issue here that I think is very important to soybean growers, and that's last week this APHIS announcement we had as it relates to the 2,4-D dicamba tolerant traits, and I guess what's essentially going to put off the ability to bring some products to market here because of some new, environmental impact studies that have to be done.
We're disappointed with what APHIS did. And disappointed that in the amount of time that these requests for approvals have been submitted, that they would not have decided that an EIS was going to be needed substantially some time ago, so that they could have gotten to work on it. I believe that the ordeal that we had on Roundup Ready alfalfa is what has led to this. But if that was the case, then we wish that they had made that announcement and started working on it much sooner. These 2,4-D tolerant and dicamba tolerant soybeans are some tools that U.S. soybean growers really need to be able to put into their toolbox to be able to combat some of these challenges that we're starting to see in some regions of the country.
Well, as we look at what's going on in the weather right now, always an interesting topic, at least in some part of the country. We certainly have corn late going into the ground in a lot of the Corn Belt. Maybe that will change around here. We keep our fingers crossed, I guess. But does this potentially mean we might see some more soybeans in some areas than we might have otherwise?
If I had a crystal ball and could predict or accurately give you the answer to that question, I'd be doing something other than farming. But all I can say that is in my farming region on the Delmarva Peninsula, most growers there have a crop mix that we rotate. We're a diversified farming region. We have a mixture of crops, and we very, very seldom deviate from that. That being said, there may be some some acres on the tail end of the 97 million acres that was predicted to be planted. That may get shifted into another crop. It's too soon to tell. And the American farmer, with the strong work ethic and the technology and equipment that we have available to us today, we can really get a crop planted in a quick period of time.
Well, I have had the opportunity to be on some farms in your part of the country on a conservation tour with CTIC. What I saw was just some pretty amazing conservation practices being done by farmers in your area. You've got a big bay of water there, I think, maybe that has caused some challenges for how you deal with things like water control and runoff, but those things, I think, being very well managed by farmers.
Chuck, I'm glad that you saw those great conservation practices that farmers in the Chesapeake Bay watershed have been employing for decades now, and hope that you continue to report on that, because those are some of the frustrations that we have farming in that watershed, is that many of the leaders in the environmental organizations, such as the Chesapeake Bay Foundation, they recognize and they openly tell us and thank us for all of the measures that we have employed. So this is not something that's just started to happen. And then the other thing is that, you know, a lot of the water that makes its way into the Chesapeake Bay is actually groundwater. So some of the groundwater that's going into the Chesapeake Bay today actually started its travel towards the bay 40 or 50 years ago, when some of those conservation practices may not have yet been employed. So this is we've already made great inroads to solving the water quality issues. We just need patient minds to be willing to wait to see the full benefit of all the things that we've done.
Well, and good public information, which I know that CTIC, the Conservation Technology Information Council, that's part of why they do these tours, is to help bring in stakeholders and policymakers to better understand what's actually going on the farm when it comes to conservation. So, yeah, I just had to bring that up because I was very impressed with what we saw there. Thank you very much, Richard Wilkins, visiting here with me. He's representing the American Soybean Association, and I'm Chuck Zimmerman reporting.